You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to This Day in History with Benjamin J. Goldson.
All right, you heard the sting. It's This Day in History, going back to 1990, the invasion of Kuwait, it's a small Middle Eastern country, by the much larger Middle Eastern country, Iraq, then led by Saddam Hussein. So this saw the sort of split of Hussein from the West, which had seen him as something of an ally, at least compared to the sort of various rulers of the country that had taken power after the downfall of pro-Western King Faisal II.
Twenty-five years ago, oil was struck at Kirkuk in Iraq. Then, to tap the vast resources that lie there, a giant pipeline was laid to Banias on the Mediterranean, 556 miles away. At a cost of £41 million, the operation is now completed, and Kirkuk celebrates the conclusion of this mighty enterprise. Now, King Faisal of Iraq and his uncle, the Prince Regent, come to Kirkuk for the inauguration ceremony. Chairman of the Iraq Petroleum Company, Admiral of the Fleet, Sir John Cunningham, escorts the 17-year-old king to the dais. Sir John's company is responsible for the huge pipeline, which His Majesty now officially opens by turning a wheel that lets the oil flow down to Banias. Now the oil is unleashed. The precious fluid that means prosperity to this land, which shares all profits with the Iraq Petroleum Company. From Kirkuk, that wealth now flows to Banias and the world.
Of course, much of this wealth would not trickle down to the average people of Iraq.
What? I can't believe it, Ben.
Well, I was trying to just be sarcastic, Lachlan, and you got to ruin it by going all over the top.
Amazing. We need a bit of enthusiasm here on the Thursday Wire.
Who knew?
You don't need to be enthusiastic, Lachlan. I mean, you learn such fascinating history.
Christ. Anyway, come on.
So, yeah, you saw growing nationalist tensions in Iraq, which sort of a lot of people wanted to follow the example you saw in Egypt, which I did last week, if people can remember, all the way back
Those
there.
Fans of the Stain History will remember.
Keeping the archive fans. Going.
That you saw the overthrow by them of King Faisal in 1958.
The latest Middle East crisis, perhaps the most menacing of all, has flared up in Iraq, a country that produces over 30 million tons of oil a year. In this picture, King Faisal is at Kirkuk with his uncle, Crown Prince Abdul Ilah. Early reports of their fate, given out by Baghdad radio in rebel hands, were contradictory. The wealth from the country's oil was used to good purpose, so the news of the revolt in Iraq was all the more startling. The inauguration of the great hydroelectric scheme provides an example of how King Faisal and his government used the oil revenue for the benefit of the people. The scheme on the Tigris and Euphrates brings irrigation, power, and prosperity to Iraq. In 1956, the young king was welcomed to London by Her Majesty the Queen. He was visiting a country he knew well, for he was educated in Britain. His visit was a popular event, and he was a guest of the City of London. His address underlined and confirmed the friendship existing between Iraq and Great Britain. Nouri's side, for many years Iraq's political leader, was first reported to have been killed, then to have escaped. It was only recently that King Faisal and his cousin King Hussein of Jordan formed a federation of their two countries. When the crisis came, King Hussein took over. Meanwhile, the Security Council has met. American Marines have landed in Lebanon.
And those American Marines would stay in Lebanon, with Iraq instead being ruled by a sort of military junta of various officers, which soon fell into turmoil. You had them divide themselves into sort of two groups, pro-Nasserists and supporters of the Ba'ath Party, based in Syria at that time. So you had further coups in which the Nasserists would at first seem successful.
The streets of ancient Baghdad become the scene of a short but decisive revolution that topples the pro-communist government of Premier Abdel Karim Qasim, shown here on the right. A six-man military junta seizes power on a holy day, and within hours, the premier, who reportedly had executed 10,000 people, is himself shot. First pictures from Iraq show the intensity of the fighting, which was directed not only at the Qasim government, but also against the thousands of East European communists who had infiltrated the country. It took 240 tanks and a brigade of mechanized infantry to break the resistance of the 1,500 military police who had been guarding the premier. The new government, which promises a modification of Qasim's bitterly anti-British, anti-American, and anti-Nasser policies, has been emptying the jails of political prisoners and replacing them with communists, rounded up since the revolution. What the final impact will be, nobody can say.
Well, the Ba'ath Party would stage a comeback in the late 1960s with a member of it, Saddam Hussein, sort of rising as Iraq's de facto leader, although he wouldn't officially take power until the late 70s, but he would definitely emerge as this sort of strongman of the government, and he would even in fact shake hands with Donald Rumsfeld, who would later serve as George W. Bush's defense secretary, in a moment that would become rather embarrassing for Rumsfeld.
Well, let me take you back about 20 years ago. The date, I believe, was in December 20th, 1983. You were meeting with Saddam Hussein. I think we have some video of that of that meeting. Tell me what was going on during this meeting.
Where did you get this video? From the Iraqi television?
This is from Iraqi television.
When did they give it to you? Recently or back then?
We've dug this out of the CNN library.
I see. Isn't that interesting? There I am.
So what was going on here? What were you thinking at the time?
Well,
that was part one of the Stay in History. Part two will return after a quick break.
So I'm doing the Cocktail Corner ad?
Yeah. Just read what's on the screen.
It just says Cocktail Corner.
Yeah. Just read it real slow.
Okay. Cocktail Corner?
That's great. Again, slower.
Cocktail Corner?
Yeah.
Shouldn't I be saying, like, Cocktail Corner, 5:30 every Thursday on 95 BFM Drive, thanks to Plantation Pineapple Rum and Bedford Soda and Liquor?
No, just read it one more time.
Is that Sade? And have you dimmed the lights?
Cocktail Corner, every Thursday on Drive.
95 BFM. Transmitted from here to there to you. With support from Grassroots Trust. Thanks, Grassroots.
Are we just going back straight back into it? All right.
Here's part two of this Stay in History.
Well, no. All right. What a shambles. So yes, we return. Saddam Hussein had emerged as something of an ally of the United States in the region, especially after the overthrow of the Shah of Iran and the nearby country, and it was replaced by the sort of revolutionary government, which was seen by the United States and its allies as very much a threat to it. So they would support Iraq in its coming invasion of Iran.
Good evening from Baghdad. One of the world's oldest cities has become one of the world's newest power centers. As soon as major hostilities broke out between the two oil producers, Iraq and Iran, we came here to Baghdad to watch OPEC at war, to look in particular at a regime seeking supremacy in the Gulf, and at its remarkable president, Saddam Hussein, one of the least known but most effective rulers in the Middle East. As the conflict between his country and Iran got underway earlier this year, it was Saddam Hussein who declared, "Whoever climbs over our fence, we shall climb over his roof."
Deep in Iranian territory, Iraqi armor chalks up fresh successes on the battlefield. For once, an Arab army is inflicting territorial loss on the enemy. The enmity here between Arab and Persian, as old as that between Arab and Jew. A border war that started months ago with fretful skirmishes. A war that no one now seems able to stop. a war that still threatens the world. Iranian resistance crumbled in the early days to the advancing Iraqis. There are signs now that they might not be having it all their own way, but in this sector at least, the Iraqis are jubilant, hauling up the Iraqi flag over Iranian government buildings, bringing with them propaganda posters of President Saddam Hussein, and posing for ironic group photographs with the old Imperial Lion of Iran.
Yes, the war would soon reach a stalemate, but ground on for many more years until finally both sides reached a truce in the late 1980s.
Today was day one of the long-awaited ceasefire in the Persian Gulf War. Iraq has charged Iran with one ceasefire violation, but for all practical purposes, the truce seems to be holding. Hal Walker reports.
With dawn in Baghdad came the first day of truce in the Iran-Iraq War. The ceasefire between the warring nations took effect at 7 a.m. But long before sunrise, the people of Iraq were on the streets celebrating the end of a conflict that has claimed up to a million lives. For their part, this was a victory celebration. Both sides claim the other started the war, but Iran's agreement to come to the peace table is taken by Iraq as an Iranian admission of guilt. The fine points will be argued by politicians. The people are just happy it's over.
It's really a great day. We wait for that from a long time.
We all fine and we love the peace always.
Even as cannons boomed out their 101-gun salutes during the day, Iraq charged that an Iraqi soldier had been killed by an Iranian sniper in violation of the ceasefire. But United Nations observers stationed between the combatants reported no break in the truce. At the disputed Shat al-Arab waterway, both sides kept a tense watch, but the first day of truce passed peacefully there, setting the stage for next week's talks in Geneva, where it is hoped a permanent settlement can be reached. Hal Walker, ABC News.
So during the war, Kuwait had been an ally of Iraq, supporting them against Iran. But after the war ended, this would change. Saddam Hussein accusing Kuwait of slant drilling, which sort of drilling underneath their borders to get at their oil, which might not have been true, but it was certainly a pretext for the invasion. And it would also come out several years afterwards, and I think it was WikiLeaks revelations actually, that America might have given Hussein the okay to invade Kuwait, which if they did would have been a cynical move, seeing as they would then
Sorry, Ben, just to go on a bit of a tangent here.
Right.
So you mentioned WikiLeaks.
Yes.
That's old mate Julian Assange, right?
Well, I wouldn't recall him a mate. But
is he still up in the Ecuadorian embassy?
I would assume so, unless they're like smuggling him out in a washing basket.
God.
I think they're about to kick him out, though. I think Ecuador's kind of sick of him.
God, you would be too.
Over 6 years.
6 years?
Yeah, over 6 years, apparently.
Good Lord. Didn't they cut off his internet access too?
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. Again, I think it was probably that they thought, well, if you're going to start backing Trump, you know.
Do you reckon he has a gym set up in there?
I think he's got like a tanning
bed. I was thinking,
like,
what would you do all day?
Yeah.
Masturbate.
Oh, Ben. Can he say that?
Oh, beautiful moment.
That's what the B
ben
stands
Goldsworth.
For. BFM.
Should we play the next clip? Are we ready to go into that one?
Yes, this is about... This is the actual state of history.
Right, 1990, we're taking you back to...
2nd of August.
On the morning of August 2nd, thousands of people in Kuwait City woke up to war.
Stay away from the window.
By mid-morning, thousands of troops had swarmed into the capital.
Now that's where a man they were brought together.
They were hiding behind the cars before.
Most had driven the 80 miles from the Iraqi border in a push that began at 2 a.m. Commando units also moved in by air. At one point, some appeared to be trapped along the beachfront.
That's the opposition, that's for sure. That's not our mob, is it?
So yes, in response to this invasion, America would launch its much-vaunted Desert Shield, first to protect Kuwait, and then Desert Storm, which would see it actively bombing Iraq.
The 28 countries with forces in the Gulf area have exhausted all reasonable efforts to reach a peaceful resolution. have no choice but to drive Saddam from Kuwait by force, we will not fail. As I report to you, air attacks are underway against military targets in Iraq.
Good morning. President Bush announcing that the Allied military operation to liberate Kuwait has begun. These are the headlines at 7 a.m. today, Thursday, the 17th of January. During the night, hundreds of American and British aircraft have mounted attacks on targets in Iraq and occupied Kuwait. Latest reports say that the bombing has resumed this morning. Earlier, the Americans said the operation had been very successful. They say there was little or no Iraqi opposition. All Allied aircraft are said to have returned safely. Iraqi missile bases are reported to have been destroyed. Other military targets are said to have been badly damaged. Speaking from the White House earlier this morning, President Bush said no nation could stand against a world united. He said he hoped war would be short and the casualties minimal. But from Iraq, Saddam Hussein has said the attack failed to crush Iraq, and he said the mother of all battles has now begun.
In the next hour, in this specially extended BBC Breakfast News, we'll have all the latest news from our correspondents on the front line, in the Gulf, in Washington, and around the world. We'll examine the aircraft the Allies are using to attack their targets, their tactics, and the likely course of the war, plus the possible economic consequences of the conflict and all the reaction. The Prime Minister, John Major, is expected to give his within the next hour or so.
The Gulf crisis finally became the Gulf War at about 11:30 British time last night. In the Gulf, it was 2:30 in the morning. Hundreds of Allied aircraft, American, British, Saudi Arabian and Kuwaiti, began a series of heavy bombing raids on targets in Iraq. According to the Americans, there was very little Iraqi resistance. The US Defense Secretary Dick Cheney has said that preliminary reports indicate that the raids have been very, very successful. These are the main details given so far by the Pentagon. Hundreds of missions have been flown. The targets were throughout Iraq and occupied Kuwait. They included military bases and nuclear and chemical warfare facilities. The Pentagon said Saddam Hussein himself was not a target. And it said that all Allied planes, including some 45 British Tornadoes, have returned safely. Many of the attacks were in and around Baghdad itself, and other Iraqi bases and missile sites are scattered throughout the country.
Eyewitnesses in Baghdad said the attacks came in wave after wave. Sources at the Pentagon are claiming that both the Iraqi Air Force and some of their elite army units have sustained very heavy damage. In his first response, the Iraqi president, Saddam Hussein, said the mother of all battles has now begun.
Yes, and he would lose that mother of all battles, although he wouldn't be removed from power until in the sort of mid-2000s following the actual invasion of Iraq.
Whatever happened to Hussein? Did they end up
hanging
him?
They hung him, yeah. Well, yeah. The Iraq government hung him. They found him in that hole.
Oh.
He was, like, hiding. Plus, he had, like, a bunch of body doubles, so they never knew if it was him or something. Which, I wish I had body doubles.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.